Well, a few years ago, Copenhagen Zoo announced a new exhibit. In a glass cage, a pair of Homo sapiens would be on display. Now, zookeeper Peter Vestergaard said that the exhibit would force people to confront their origins, causing them to accept that we're all primates. After all, he said, humans and apes share 98.5% of the same chromosomes. And yet, what an amazing difference that 1.5% seems to make. While their hairy neighbours were busy staring at the cage, swinging from the railings and picking lice from each other's coats, the caged Homo sapiens, otherwise known as Henrik Lehmann and Milena Botoft, read books, worked on a motorcycle, checked their emails, and when necessary, adjusted the air conditioning. The Homo sapiens were also free to leave their cage whenever they felt the primitive urge to go to the cinema or to have a candlelit dinner. Well, a few weeks later, after the experiment was ended, both Homo sapiens left the primate house. Were they any wiser for their experience? Well, I hope so. I suspect that they were forced to accept that rather than being merely extra intelligent apes, they were actually qualitatively different from the monkeys in the surrounding cages. Now, while some influential thinkers like that zookeeper may believe that human beings are merely animals with a few extra advantages over other species, most of us deep down feel that this is very hard to believe and accept. We have a strong sense that human beings are valuable and significant, and so we react against discrimination and prejudice and lack of respect. Well, as in so many areas of life, the Bible explains that hunch that we have deep down. At the heart of that Bible reading that we had from the Old Testament Psalm 8 is a universally significant question. Great King David, known to most people for his famous victory over giant Goliath as a young man, when he grew up was ruler of the special people of God in the Middle East 3,000 years ago. And he writes in this psalm, "What is man that you are mindful of him, and the son of man that you care for him?" So in this inspired poem, some important and profound answers from God emerge, which are foundational in showing how we humans should understand ourselves, how we should relate to each other, and indeed, how we should relate to God himself. Now, if you want to follow where we're going, the psalm is on page 540 of these black church Bibles, page 540. I will be referring to it as we go along, page 540. Now, it is interesting, I think, that the question, what is mankind, what are human beings, comes out of this song, which begins with the overwhelming greatness of God. So, first of all, as we look together at this psalm, we see that to understand human beings, we must start with God. Now, of course, we live in a world that is influenced by the power and authority of significant individuals. The most powerful nation on earth is about to elect the most powerful man on earth as its president. The world is being rocked at the moment by the economic power of a few individuals and their decisions. And less powerful countries are dominated for good and ill by particular rulers. So you only have to think of Kim Jong-il in North Korea, or Robert Mugabe in Zimbabwe, or Hu Jintao in China. But here's David, a king himself, one who knows where real authority and power belong. So verse 1 of the psalm, "O Lord, our Lord, how majestic is your name in all the earth. You have set your glory above the heavens." Earthly greatness, wealth and influence may hold sway for a while in a particular place, but the majesty of the true and living God is known in all the earth. And if that wasn't enough, his glory, the essence of who he is, in his infinite power and loving faithfulness, is set above the heavens, that is, the sky and space. Now, David knows these things are true of God from what he had read in his Bible, the Old Testament books of the law. And his own experience of the universe underlines it. So verse 3, "When I look at your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have set in place, See, we've all done it, haven't we? On a clear night in somewhere like here in Ferriby, where there's little light pollution from a city's street lights, we look up and see something of the vastness of the cosmos. Well, King David is staggered by the greatness of the visible universe. The stars emitting their own light, planets reflecting light, and nearer to home, our moon, all made by God. Now, astronomers tell us that a galaxy consists of an island in space, made up of gas and dust and many, many stars. And our own galaxy, the Milky Way, apparently includes at least 200 billion stars. And yet our galaxy is itself only one of billions of other galaxies. See, David knew that what he could see and what he could not see, God has put in place. All that God has made reflects his greatness and his glory. So to understand what human beings are, we need to begin with the overwhelming greatness of the God whose idea we are in the first place. Well, this psalm also points us to the truth that human beings are special to God. This overwhelming sense of the greatness of the God who has given us life and given life to the universe makes King David ask his central question. So verse 3 in the psalm: "When I look at your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have set in place, what is man that you are mindful of him, and the son of man that you care for him?" You see, it's as if David says, when I try and get my head around your greatness, O God, the way that you're so immense and powerful, so full of glory and infinite in your creativity, what are human beings in comparison? We seem so small and insignificant in contrast to this vast and intricate universe that you have made. And yet human beings take a significant place in your thoughts. And more than that, we are the objects of your caring concern. "What is man that you are mindful of him," he writes, "and the son of man that you care for him?" Now, it is a remarkable thing that of all the creatures that God has made, only one, it seems, has the capacity to ask questions of self-awareness like this question. And that in itself, of course, points us to the answer. Verse 5. "You have made him," that is mankind, "a little lower than the heavenly beings, and crowned him with glory and honour." You see, there are those who would look at human beings and see us as super intelligent animals. The high point of all zoological examples, yes, but just those who got lucky. Others see humanity as extremely complex biological machines. Yes, capable of remarkable chemical reactions which result in activities that we cannot yet reproduce in man-made technology, but merely machines nonetheless. But David recognises that which the opening words of the Bible make clear, that human beings are unique in the animal kingdom. We have been made in the image of God. We are made by God, for God, and a little bit like God. "You have made humankind a little lower than the heavenly beings and crowned him with glory and honour." Human beings, he says, are just a little less significant than the supernatural beings in heaven. And God has just been described as the one whose glory is above the skies. Well, now human beings are said to be crowned with glory and honour themselves. Now, do you see what this means? You and I share something of the characteristics of God himself. You and I are in some ways God-like. Now, this has a great importance and significance for us as human beings. You see, everyone is known by God. Everyone is cared for by God. Every human being matters to God. And that means that we have great dignity. I don't know whether you've heard the reporting of the article by Baroness Warnock this last week about those suffering from dementia. Now, Lady Warnock is apparently a very well-known medical ethicist, and she said this in a piece. She said, "If you are demented, you are wasting people's lives, your family's lives, and you are wasting the resources of the National Health Service." And the implication seemed to be that if you felt you're a burden to others, you had a right, maybe even a duty, to ask to be helped to die. Now, Lady Warnock is supposed to be a respected academic, but does she realise the implications of what she says? The implications for those who are vulnerable people in our society. If we're to take that sort of attitude towards those who have dementia, what about the disabled? What about the incurably ill? Even those who are poor or unemployed who can't make much of an economic contribution. Well, how different is God's view of people outlined here in the Bible? Everyone has value because everyone has been made in the image of God. A little lower than the heavenly beings, crowned with glory and honour. So whoever we are, whatever we have done or not done, whatever we can offer or indeed not offer, we all have great dignity in God's sight. Now that human beings are made in the image of God also means that we have great purpose. Look at verse 6 of the psalm. You, O God, have given humankind dominion over the works of your hands. You have put all things under his feet, all sheep and oxen and all beasts of the field, the birds of the heavens and the fish of the sea, whatever passes along the paths of the sea. Being made in the image of God means that human beings are to exercise dominion over the world. Now that doesn't mean domination, but rather that we have been given responsibility under God to look after the world for and with him. We are to steward the world's resources. We're to seek to care for the world and make the most of the gifts that God has given to us. Now this truth also gives our daily work great meaning. We should work not just as a means to pay the bills, but also as an expression of our humanness in the service of our Maker. Now such God-given stewardship is also the real foundation for a right care for the environment. This is God's world after all, and he expects us to be responsible for it. So human beings are special to God. We have great dignity and purpose. But you know, reading these words also reminds us that as we look around at our world, all is not well. We see human beings failing to show respect for each other. Not just in the headline cases of abuse and violence or greed on the stock exchange dealing room floor, but also in the home, in the office, even in the school playground. God may have made us stewards, co-rulers with him of his world and its environment, but our track record is frankly pretty shabby. Whatever you think of global warming and its causes, we clearly abuse our world by pollution, and we fail to share resources round, allowing appalling poverty. Well, all these things and more can be traced back to the reality that all is not well with our relationship with the one who has made us. King David speaks here of the sad fact that human beings so often are running in a different direction from God, becoming, in the words of verse 2, God's foes, preferring to try and rule the world without him, turning away from him. And this affects our relationships with each other, with our environment, and with him. So here's this psalm, containing so much that is affirming of our humanity, our great dignity, our significance and our value, but also pointing us to our brokenness and what the Bible calls elsewhere our sin. Blaise Pascal, the brilliant French mathematician whose triangle you might just remember from school, I think I can just about remember it, he put this truth that we are crazy mixed up kids rather well. He said, what a moving shadow is man. What a confused chaos. What a subject of contradiction. The great guardian of the truth and yet a mere huddle of uncertainty. The glory and the scandal of the universe. Well, thankfully, our psalm here before us this morning points us not just to this reality, but also to great hope. And that's our final point this morning. That the uniquely special human being has come on a rescue mission from God. These words from Psalm 8 about our humanity are picked up 1,000 years later by New Testament writers. They quote them to point to a particular man. A man who famously called himself the Son of Man, echoing verse 4 of our psalm. So as our second Bible reading put it, it has been testified somewhere, here in Psalm 8, what is man that you are mindful of him, or the Son of Man that you care for him? You made him for a little while lower than the angels, you've crowned him with glory and honour, putting everything in subjection under his feet. At present, we do not yet see everything in subjection to him, but we see Jesus, who for a little while was made lower than the angels, crowned with glory and honour, because of the suffering of death, so that by the grace of God he might taste death for everyone. So the New Testament understands this psalm as pointing to Jesus of Nazareth, the perfect image of God, the one truly crowned with glory and honour, because he died on the cross to put right that which has caused the messing up of the world by the rest of us. We heard last week on the news that China is now entering the space race. And there was talk a few months ago of the Americans sending people to the moon again, over 35 years since it happened last in 1972. Colonel James Irwin was one of the first men to walk on the moon. And soon after that experience he said this: "The greatest miracle is not that man stood on the moon, but that God came and stood on the earth." You see, Jesus is God himself in human form. And that is a wonderful reality in so many ways, but not least in that it shows that God knows just what it's like to experience what we human beings experience. Like you and me, God knows just what it's like to know joy and happiness in our lives. And like you and me, he knows just what it's like to know sadness, to be misunderstood by others, to face bereavement, to suffer yourself or to see a relative suffer. And these things he can share with us. Well, as we've been saying, today is Back to Church Sunday, and various ways of communicating this have been used around the country. Apparently the professional football games in the Midlands yesterday had special adverts in their match day programme. So where fans at Wolverhampton Wanderers versus Bristol City and Stoke City against Chelsea would have seen pages in their programmes telling them that because Jesus has already taken the penalty, you can be saved. Now, these adverts, I think, were meant to be so rather humorous, because it is rather corny, but the point is actually very profound. Jesus came specifically, as our reading from Hebrews says, to be crowned with glory and honour because of the suffering of death. He died that by the grace of God he might taste death for everyone. So you see, Jesus' death and victory over death in his resurrection can bring rescue to people from the consequences of running away from God. Now, yes, we don't see everything in subjection to him yet. God is waiting for the day when Jesus will return to introduce the full sorting out of the world. But those who trust in Jesus can be rescued and can be restored to being connected to God and to a life of purpose following him, because of what God has done in Jesus. Today, many thousands of people have been invited back to church. As we hear this truth, that Jesus has already taken the penalty so that you can be saved, we have an invitation to come back home to God. See, God calls us to stop running away from him, and instead to rely on what he has done through his Son to bring rescue. It's not about trying to be a better person from now on, or seeking to be a religious person. Such things may be good in themselves, but they'll never make us acceptable to God. We need what God has done in Jesus, his death on the cross, to present us before him as acceptable. He stood in to take the penalty for us. Well, now, you might be here this morning, and maybe you're thinking that's interesting, and maybe that you're thinking that there's a degree of plausibility about what the Bible says about human beings and about our need for God. But I have a lot of questions and issues I want to think through. Well, if that's you, can I commend to you again what Hugh mentioned earlier, the Christianity Explored sessions, this chance to ask questions and to find out more about Jesus and what he said and what he did. So whether you are someone who has a Christian faith and is wanting to re-examine the foundations, or indeed someone who knows that they've never really come to put their trust in Jesus but wants to find out more, well, Christianity Explored may be helpful to you. Well, we've had this question before us this morning. What is man? What are human beings? Well, some, like that Danish zookeeper we heard about at the start, may think that we are just super intelligent animals. Others, that we are merely sophisticated biological machines. But what we have seen is that to understand human beings, we must start with the majestic, glorious, true and living God. And when we do that, we see that we are uniquely special to God, made like him in his image, having dignity and purpose. However, when we're honest with ourselves, we realize that we have betrayed God's trust by running away from him. And yet in his great love, God has sent Jesus, the uniquely special human, on a rescue mission. And through his death, we can be restored to God and restored to that great purpose that we were meant to have in following him and living for him. Let's pray together.